The Mississippi River travels more than 2,300 miles down the middle of America. In its winding journey south, it touches 10 states. But it does more than that. It divides them. For some on the western bank, the eastern side might as well be another world. For St. Louis, the river has long been a barrier, separating land, opportunity, and even identity itself. When I learned that a company offered tours taking people out on the Mississippi River, I jumped at the opportunity. I wanted to experience being on that divide myself.
If you need any dry bags for anything, feel free to take.
Okay.
Definitely recommend.
15 of us gathered at the cobblestone bank of the Mississippi River, just under the Poplar Street Bridge near the Gateway Arch. Big Muddy Adventures is an outfitter that organizes these canoe trips on the Mississippi.
One thing I want you to do is just look down at your shoes, wave goodbye. This is Big Muddy Adventures, all right? Not small, clean, easy. Your shoes are going to get wet. They're going to get a little bit muddy. It's hard to load a canoe while keeping everyone dry. But if you're okay just getting your feet wet, we're going to be good. We can get that boat floating and get out there.
Peter Nagel was our lead guide and captain for the day.
And then we'll get going. Our trip today, so we go from North Riverfront Park. It'll be about a 45-minute trip to Mozenthien Island. That is an all-natural, completely uninhabited island. We'll go there for lunch. We are going to return right here to the cobblestones, right where we parked our cars. So that's our trip today.
April Swagman and Nick Hall are two of my fellow paddlers and St. Louis natives. They recently moved back after spending some time in San Francisco and Colorado.
We're just kind of outdoorsy folks. This is a birthday present for Nick.
We like canoeing, we like kayaking, done it on much smaller bodies of water, lakes or smaller rivers.
The Missouri floating tradition is, you know, to get on a raft on a slow-moving river with some drinks and, you know, take your time. So we've done plenty of that back in the day. But some people, when we said they were doing this, like, what? You can canoe on the Mississippi River?
We filed into vans that took us about 10 miles upstream to North Riverfront Park near the Chain of Rocks Bridge at the northern border of the city.
Thank you.
When we arrived at the park, we saw other folks enjoying their morning along the river. Some, like Terry, visit the banks of the Mississippi all the time.
Y'all come down to the river a lot?
Yeah, we finna go fishing.
Oh, you're gonna go fishing right now?
Yeah, we're trying to find the coolest spot.
Oh, wow. What kind of fish do you catch around here?
Catfish, white perch.
Oh, wow.
And you keep buffalo. It? Yeah, keep it.
Oh, nice.
Have a fish fry at the end of the year.
Oh, that's great.
So, September. Yeah.
How often do y'all get out down here?
Every Sunday, every weekend.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Do you know they do tours like this here?
Oh, no, I never knew that.
Yeah, they go on a canoe and they go down to the arch from here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's decent. Nice talking to you.
Likewise, Terry. Thank you so much.
After a short lesson on paddling and fastening on our life vests, it was finally time to get on the water. Our group split between two Voyager canoes, big canoes that can hold a dozen people, one in cardinal red, the other olive green. Like Captain Peter warned, getting them into the river wasn't easy. It's all hands on deck to carry the vessels down steep makeshift muddy stairs at the bank on the Mississippi.
Push it. All right, 3, 2, 1.
There's no marina or even a pier to ease our way in. So we take hold, carry the boats over, and drop them in with our guides waist deep in the river, ready to catch them.
Boom. Nicely done. Who's ready for round 2?
We carefully stepped into the canoes and started paddling upriver along the bank.
So go ahead and get those paddles ready. Go ahead and get those paddles ready. Forward in 3, 2, 1. Stroke, 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 stroke. There you go. Keep going, keep going. Follow the person in front of you. We're gonna go about a quarter of a mile upriver here. We're gonna be doing what we like to call the Mississippi wiggle. So we're not necessarily traveling in a straight line. We're looking for the slackest, slowest water so we don't have too much current to fight against. And to do that, we're kind of weave back and forth here along the shoreline.
It's Terry. Hey, Terry.
Hi.
We then beeline straight across the river to get a good angle to the east side of Mozenthien Island, almost a full mile downstream from where we put in. We saw a bald eagle soaring overhead and a flock of pelicans resting on a sandbar. We navigated twisty whirlpools created by rocks deep in the riverbed. It was beautiful and exciting and a little disorienting. This part of the Mississippi splits around Mozantine Island and curves to the west. With the overcast sky, three bodies of land around us, and the twisty current, there were times I wasn't sure if I was heading toward Missouri or Illinois. Then, we hit some headwinds. Literally.
It's so windy, I can hear it in the microphones. It's nuts. It's crazy how windy I got all of a sudden.
At a slow and steady pace, I know it got windy here. But we'll be good, we're just gonna keep slow and steady, keep on moving.
Are you getting good wind sounds?
What's that?
There's no such thing as a good wind sound.
All right, we're going to come up to this cut bank right here. You can see it's quite windy. We got some waves. And I got to reach out to Mark there. When we come ashore, stay in the boat. Wait for Derek and I to hop out. We're going to try to hold the boat steady. Oh, man. Big wind.
We'll get back to our canoe trip on the Mississippi River a little later. Right now, I want to take you to another riverbank, about 8 miles downstream. There's a spot on the eastern bank of the Mississippi that arguably offers the best view of the Gateway Arch. A little-known place in Illinois called Malcolm W. Martin Memorial Park. This park, and the man it's named after, carry a story that has spanned nearly 80 years. A story that's still being written today. About dreams, divides, and a commitment to bridge them. Meet me at the riverfront. I'm Luis Antonio Perez, and this is Meet Me, a project from St. Louis Public Radio about connecting across divides to find a way forward. In this episode, we explore the Mississippi River. While thousands of residents cross it every day without a second thought, for many more, it serves as one of the most prominent divides in the St. Louis area, a psychological barrier that shapes the way people move throughout the region, where they feel they belong, and how they imagine the city and the people on the other side. We'll learn about Malcolm Martin and the park named after him, and how they've come to represent an idea about how to bridge the region's bi-state divide, by uniting St. Louisans with the one symbol we all identify with. In the St. Louis region, for some people, Malcolm W. Martin Memorial Park is the place you go for wedding photos, or the place you stumble upon while searching for a better view of the 4th of July fireworks on the Mississippi. The park sits directly across from the Gateway Arch. For years, the park was home to the Gateway Geyser, a tower of water that shot hundreds of feet in the sky. On calm days, it rose as high as the arch, mirroring the monument on the other side of the river. The geyser stopped running a couple of years ago because it was too expensive to maintain, but the park still hosts a large American flag in the center of a grassy field and a viewing platform where visitors can get a full view of the Gateway Arch and the Mississippi River against the backdrop of the St. Louis skyline. A few months ago, an announcement came out of nowhere. Big plans for this little park. Plans that, if they actually happen, could change what this side of the river means for the entire region.
Well, for many of us, it seems like it wasn't that long ago that the Arch grounds underwent a $380 million renovation.
Now plans are in the works to extend Gateway Arch National Park across the river into Illinois. 5 Meter Side's Holder Kowicki is live in Malcolm Martin Park in East St. Louis to explain the latest plans for expansion.
Well, Kelly and Mike, it was said repeatedly today that the best view of the Arch in downtown St. Louis is right here in East St. Louis. Now, the Gateway Arch Park Foundation and congressional leaders from both sides of the river believe they have a plan to get some of the 2.4 million visitors to the Arch to the East Riverfront.
Local and federal political leaders on both sides of the aisle and both sides of the river sponsored legislation to expand the boundaries of Gateway Arch National Park into East St. Louis to include this park. The person pushing the plan is Ryan McClure, executive director of the Gateway Arch Park Foundation. Ryan met me at Malcolm W. Martin Memorial Park on a sunny morning to walk me through the vision for expansion.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, Ryan, right?
Nice to meet you.
Louise, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I'm just capturing sounds of the train here.
Yeah. Part of the environment.
Yeah.
My name is Ryan McClure. I'm the executive director of Gateway Arch Park Foundation.
And what are we doing right now?
So we are walking on the overlook platform for Malcolm Martin Park here in East St. Louis. This park was really set aside and created to interact with Gateway Arch National Park. Malcolm Martin was involved way back in 1947 in the international design competition that Eero Saarinen won for the design of the arch. And in that design competition, Saarinen had this park on both sides of the river, meaning the arch grounds. So Malcolm Martin spent the rest of his career trying to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And that's why this park is here. And we have an opportunity now to finally see that vision through, and we're really committed to that.
And Ryan has a proven track record. He played a major role in the City Arch River project, a $380 million decade-long project to revitalize the area around Gateway Arch National Park, the highlight of which was building a land bridge over Interstate 44 that connected the arch grounds to downtown St. Louis, making the monument more accessible. But as we shouted over the sounds of trucks, trains, and landscapers, I couldn't ignore other permanent fixtures of the landscape, like the massive grain elevator looming next to the park.
You know, we're talking about the divides and expanding the park, but I can't help but sort of see there's like a lot of industrial infrastructure around here. There's some railroad tracks, and how does that factor into developing this side of the park?
Yeah, I mean, using the City Arch River project as an example, we're no strangers to mitigating the impact of infrastructure, right? So we had to cover an interstate highway to physically connect the arch grounds to St. Louis. Now, it's not easy, it's gonna be hard, but things that are worth doing are often hard. So we firmly believe that we can deal with the infrastructure that's here, that frankly is really important to the operations of this river. The facility right behind me is a Cargill facility that processes grain and soy. I mean, that's really important to agriculture in America. This is Cargill's busiest facility on the Mississippi River. So there's a story to tell here.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then, you know, the hard question, I think, is folks seem to be asking a lot of questions, you know, about do we even need this? Should we spend any money and time and effort on this kind of thing? There's so many things happening right now that we can be focused on. I can hear in my head folks in North St. Louis, let's say, saying we should focus on getting something going up here instead of expanding a park that's already there.
Right.
What's the response to that?
Well, first of all, I would say I don't see a reason why all of it can't be done. I don't think we should be operating from a sense of scarcity, but more a sense of abundance. You know, absolutely. You know, development in North St. Louis and recovery from the tornado is critical, not just for the folks that live there, but for our entire region. And that community deserves that. Just like East St. Louis, that has, you know, lost tens of thousands of people, of population since the 1950s, you know, they deserve to have a national park in their community. So I have, and we have, no qualms about answering the question, is this worth it and should we be focusing on it? Of course we should. We should also be focusing on the other things we just talked about. I believe that we can do all of it.
Ryan paints a compelling picture. But to be honest, when I pulled up to Malcolm Martin Park to set up for my interview with Ryan, I struggled to imagine it as part of a national park.
Huge American flag here on this side.
You know, that area, the wooded area to the south of Malcolm Mountain Park, is fenced off with like barbed wire at the top of the fences. As you can hear, they're still doing some landscaping. Okay, here at the tier below, the top tier, you can already look directly across the park. I mean, it's nice. But this industrial building here, it does something to break the sort of beautiful view. And we've got some power lines too, like really massive power lines here on this side of Illinois. It's a strange juxtaposition. Oh, and I guess there's a statue of Malcolm W. Martin here. And there's some landscapers here. Oh, sorry, am I in the way? Okay. A well-kept park with a broken geyser. A large American flag in a beautiful grassy field, flanked by a towering active grain elevator to the north, and to the south, a wooded area fenced off with barbed wire. A picturesque view of St. Louis, its historic bridges, and the iconic Gateway Arch, a heavily obstructed view. My conversation with Ryan and seeing the statue at the top of the overlook made me more curious about the man the park is named after, Malcolm W. Martin. What did he mean that Malcolm spent his career trying to expand the park to Illinois? After the break, we meet one of the foremost experts on Malcolm's life. To learn more about the life of Malcolm W. Martin and his involvement with expanding the Gateway Arch National Park grounds, I was directed to Mr. Marshall Heyer. In fact, one of the folks I spoke with for this story said they wouldn't say another word until I talked with Marshall. Mr. Marshall Heyer is a retired attorney, writer, and historian in St. Louis. He was a close friend and colleague of Malcolm Martin. And since Malcolm's passing, Marshall, who's now 80 years old, has become the expert on his life. When Marshall came to St. Louis as a young attorney in 1968, he thought Malcolm was a little odd.
I was by myself. I knew basically no St. Louisans, so I was on my own. So Malcolm said, Marshall, Sunday, if you're not doing anything, we could have lunch at this restaurant on Lindell, and they basically serve salads. And I thought, what kind of breakfast is this? And afterwards, Marshall, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I know when a certain train is going to pass by a certain crossing, and we're going to drive there, and we're going to stop and watch that train go through. I thought to myself, oh golly, is this what St. Louis is going to mean to me?
But the older colleague with quirky interests would become a mentor to the young Marshall. At his home in South St. Louis County, Marshall showed off several artifacts from Malcolm's life. Paintings and drawings he inherited from Malcolm, and so many stories from the life of his mentor. Malcolm Martin was a descendant of Kentucky slave owners. His father came to St. Louis in 1895 and would become the first chairman of the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis in 1914. Later, he would serve as the bank's president. Malcolm's brother, William McChesney Martin Jr., would live a very storied life, becoming the youngest president of the New York Stock Exchange and the longest ever Federal Reserve chair, serving under five presidents, from Truman to Nixon. Both brothers were drafted to fight in World War II. Malcolm was awarded a Bronze Star for helping plan the D-Day invasion, but he was most proud of his advocacy and commitment to racial equity. He had risen to the rank of Army captain when a base commander threatened to disband Malcolm's integrated company of half-white and half-black soldiers. Malcolm leveraged his connections and successfully kept his company together. Malcolm's attachment to the Gateway Arch is its own story.
Well, when Malcolm returned from the war, he had been absent from his law firm for 4 years, and he had no client base. I mean, his father had one, but in order for lawyers to eat in a newly formed firm, you basically had to round up your own clientele, and Malcolm had none. So he asked his dad, and his dad said, Malcolm, until you do have your own clientele, Let me direct you to our neighbor, Luther Ely Smith.
Luther Ely Smith is known today as the father of the Gateway Arch. Malcolm played a big part in the 1948 competition that would ultimately be won by Errol Saarinen with his arch and park ground design.
He helped raise the money for it. He did not get to choose the winning design, but he was so delighted in Errol Saarinen's design for the arch. And unlike a lot of St. Louisans who followed the progress of that competition, he realized that the arch was only part of Saarinen's dream. Saarinen had envisioned a park on the east side where people could get a good view of the arch.
The Gateway Arch was completed in 1965, but sadly, neither the monument's champion, Luther Ely Smith, nor its architect, Errol Saarinen, ever got to see it. Both men died before construction started. And only part of Saarinen's vision would be complete, as the park grounds did not span across the river. Malcolm was committed to carrying forward Saarinen's dream. He founded a nonprofit in 1969, the Gateway Center of Metropolitan St. Louis, with half of its members from Missouri and half from Illinois. The group's goal was to work towards expansion of Gateway Arch National Park to the East Bank, one step at a time.
Well, let's first buy up the property. There were 50 acres which were not being used by the owner, which was the Illinois Central Railroad Company. The property, you know, had some problems with it in terms of, contamination and everything else because it was used as railroad, as railroad yards. But Malcolm said, let's begin by buying it.
And there began the long arc bending toward expansion. Over the next 35 years, through his nonprofit organization, Malcolm would clean up the land, develop it, and lobby the federal government to expand the park. Every bit of progress seemed to be met with a setback. In 1984, Congress passed legislation to expand the park, and President Reagan signed it. But the initiative was never funded. Despite decades of effort, Malcolm's nonprofit was unsuccessful with their national park plans. Then, Malcolm's health took a turn. He was hit by a driver while crossing 4th Street, just a block from the arch grounds. He never fully recovered. Marshall, as a member of the nonprofit board, faced difficult questions about how to continue the effort.
Toward the end, although mentally very acute, he deteriorated. And then when he reached 90, he took up residence in a nursing home. The board continued to meet, but the board's decision had to be, what do we do after Malcolm is no longer with us?
And then a new path emerged. The newly formed Metro East Park and Recreation District was responsible for overseeing and maintaining parks in St. Clair and Madison counties. Malcolm's nonprofit, Gateway Center for Metropolitan St. Louis, decided it was time to hand over stewardship of the park, but only if the district agreed on two conditions.
We made it one of the conditions that if the National Park Service offers to take this over, that you will give them charge of it. Yeah, but the most important thing for us is that you name this park after Malcolm W. Martin. And they said, sure enough, we can do that. And so we had this all set up and we approached Malcolm with this great idea. Malcolm was delighted that this would be taken over. But when we told him that we insisted that Metro East name this park after you, and Malcolm said, no, please don't. And because Malcolm was just that kind. And after we fussed with him for a while, he said, please don't. And we said, Malcolm, you know that you've been told you're dying. We'll just wait till you're gone. Then you won't have anything to say about it. He laughed and said, go ahead.
Malcolm died shortly after, in 2004. Marshall is fond of an inscription near the top of the viewing platform at Malcolm Martin Park. It describes his mentor in one short sentence.
Malcolm Martin represents the need to dream. And sadly, dreamers don't always see fulfillment of their dreams during their lifetime. I mean, we have famous examples of that. Sorry, I can get choked up at times. But, and Malcolm was that way. And it wasn't important to Malcolm to get recognition for this. To Malcolm, the fulfillment was the important thing.
A life-size bronze statue of Malcolm is at the very top of the viewing platform. He's seated, one leg crossed over the other, looking back across the river with a slight smile. He looks reflective, almost peaceful.
We think he's kind of a welcoming presence on the platform.
Marshall pointed out that Malcolm isn't looking directly at the arch as you might expect. His gaze is slightly to the north, towards a spot where he used to stand on his own downtown balcony, dreaming about what this side of the river could become someday. Under Marshall's leadership, the nonprofit continued to advocate for the expansion of Gateway Arch National Park across the river, and it still does today, as Marshall has passed leadership onto the next generation.
If Malcolm didn't get discouraged in his 92 years, neither should we nor the generation that follows, because it's for their benefit ultimately that all of this might come to pass.
As we heard from Ryan McClure earlier, that dream of extending Gateway Arch National Park across the river to Malcolm Martin Park is closer to becoming a reality. Although plans are in their early stages, U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, who represents East St. Louis in Congress, introduced legislation in March to expand the national park's boundaries. It's in committee and has bipartisan support from both sides of the river. But still, there's no timeline or a budget. Yet, another person who thinks it can happen is Ms. Deborah Moore of East St. Louis. She sits on several government and development boards in the region, including the nonprofit Malcolm founded.
Yes, the park is small. Yes, the park is sort of planted between two incompatible uses, but it is there and making a formidable statement for not only the east side of the river, but for the west side of the river as well.
How do you deal with sort of facing these like obstacles that just seem so big and so long, and just the idea, the vision is good, but is this ever gonna even happen?
Well, this has been in the minds of several, certainly members of our board, Mr. Martin, for many years. So it's already long, and it did not have the support. It did not resonate with the Missouri side of the river as it does now. So it's a giant step forward. And what is the timeline? When will it happen? We don't know any of that. But we're at a place now that we have never been before. You hold on to the dream until it becomes a reality.
Malcolm held on to Saarinen's dream for as long as he could. Then Marshall picked it up and carried the dream forward. Now Deborah, Ryan, and others continue to push ahead. Back on the Mississippi River canoe trip, we were on shore, marooned on Mozambique Island, in the center of the Great River.
The canoes are just splashing up against the banks here.
40-mile-an-hour wind gusts blew our hats and napkins across the small clearing.
It's sort of hard to do anything. It's blowing like straight in, pretty much, right across the river from the east. Well, to be honest, I'm kind of disoriented. I can't tell if it's blowing from the east or the south. Oh man, this is wild, this wind.
We ate sandwiches as our outfitters decided whether we'd get to continue our journey downriver to the Gateway Arch. Then, Captain Peter had an update.
Can you tell us what's going on?
Oh, yeah. So, it's very windy today, and it's windier than we would have liked it. So, we do plan for situations like this, contingency plans. So, instead of going 6 miles into a headwind down to the arch, We're going to use the wind to our advantage, and we're going to turn around and go back up the island. It's only 2 miles, and we're just going to head back to the put-in.
So we're going to go back to where we started?
Yes, we are. Straight back to where we started.
All right. There's something very St. Louis about that story. April, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you feeling about the news?
I'm a little bummed. You know, wanted to come up and see the brilliant, you know, arch reveal.
You can't see it from here yet.
You can't see it. But yeah, you know, go with the flow.
With the wind, I guess.
Go with the wind.
The other canoe told me that they almost lost the lunch, too.
Oh, no!
I think when they were trying to dock the
canoes. Oh, my gosh. That would have been devastating.
We paddled back to where we started, North Riverfront Park, pulled the canoes out of the water, and drove back to the cobblestone shores at Gateway Arch National Park. A bold launch, unexpected headwinds, a scenic return to square one, a St. Louis story. I've been thinking about Malcolm and Marshall and Ryan and Arrow, Luther and Deborah, and all of the St. Louisans that dared to dream beyond. And not only dream, they endeavored. They launched boldly without knowing what would happen. They pushed beyond limitations, across divides. Most stories about overcoming adversity are about pushing through until you reach the goal, a celebration of triumph. But what about those who push and progress and advance, but never quite make it there themselves? The idea never becomes a reality they can enjoy. No matter how many obstacles they overcome or headwinds they endure, they never fully arrive. Maybe that's what I admire most about St. Louisans. We go anyway. No matter how many setbacks, no matter how small the progress may seem, or how many times our dreams are knocked off course, we push anyway. And beyond that, we keep dreaming. There's something in the trying itself. It is worthwhile to imagine, worthwhile to believe. Because even unfinished dreams can move a region forward. And maybe, just maybe, they leave a bridge, a path, or a possibility for someone else. You've been listening to Meet Me, a project from St. Louis Public Radio about connecting across divides to find a way forward. Share this episode with your family and friends, and follow us on Instagram at MeetMeSTL. We also have a newsletter. Sign up at stlpr.org. This episode was hosted, produced, and mixed by me, Luis Antonio Perez, with writing support and story editing by Brian Heffernan and Alex Hoyer. Meet Me's engagement producer is Paola Rodriguez, with editorial support from Laura Hamden. Brian Heffernan is our executive producer. Theme music by Cutta and Friends. Additional music by Thomas Payton. Special thanks to Will Bauer, Matt Green, Big Muddy Adventures, Ariel Claypool, and Thomas Schlafly. Grant support comes from the James S. McDonald Foundation. Meet me back here next time.